All right, welcome in to See Ball, Get Ball. I'm your host, David Pollack. Brent Rollins with me, like always. Writes for Rivals, writes for PFF. I think this will be really, really cool, Brent, because I think this will be story time again. We had Tom Rinaldi on. If you missed that, it was one of the best interviews you'll ever listen to. Go back. Don't take my word for it. Go back and listen to it. He's just so good. And this guy, Gary Danielson, I think just the amount – I was just writing down some things earlier, like to talk to him about, like – Spurrier, Bowden, Cam Newton, Johnny Football, Tim Tebow, like the list of people that he covered for so many years calling SEC games. As soon as he comes on, you're going to be like, oh, I knew that voice. Like it's the voice of 330 football and SEC football for the last, 20 plus years. So I think that'll be really exciting along with Tourney Talk and all the other good things going on, homie.
I'm very looking forward to hearing just what he remembers the most about all the time, specifically in the SEC, because especially where we are in this part of the country, his voice and him and Vern and now Brad Nessler just rings. It's rite of passage, which unfortunately not the case anymore because he does the Big Ten. And obviously he announced that he's going to be retiring after this season. So it's going to be a lot of fun talking to him. But the Tourney, Chalk, one seeds.
First time since 2008. Them. And that was the first time ever that all one seeds made it. And it's kind of crazy to watch. But you're watching all these teams, Brent. Like, who you think is going to win this thing?
I mean, I think it's going to be Duke. But playing Houston is, like, those guys fight. Like, it's an absolute war with those guys on defense and the way they play defense. So it'll be fun to watch. But I think that you mentioned 08, like that was Derrick Rose and Mario Chalmers and that. So there was a lot of good games, or the championship was awesome that year. So Hopefully it's just good games, because that's all I care about. I just want to watch good basketball.
I tell you what, I'm not sleeping on War Eagle either, because I like all the elements of what Auburn has. And they got some bigs that I love. I watch 44 and I watch 31 and I'm like, dude, unselfish, just rebounding, make whatever plays need to be made, switch, like, and then that freshman, oh my gosh, watching zero play, and you're like, holy cow. Like, he's got some shake. And I love the construction of the team, too. They went mid-major and got some older guys that had experience. They're not superstars, but, like, a lot of this and a lot of experience. So I don't count Auburn out either, but Duke's defense is so good. And – yeah, they got the big guy in the middle, man, with that 7 foot, 70,000 wingspan that just, he affects everyone. He makes everybody's life miserable. And then obviously the freshmen that are all going to be top 15 picks, that doesn't hurt either. Putting Cooper Flagg and company together.
Imagine, it's kind of hard to imagine, I guess, that the most talented team is beating the crap out of people on their way to the Final Four. It's kind of shocking. Clayton, though, Walter Clayton for Florida, big time. At the end of that game, the stones to take the couple threes that he took, and that was a big time comeback.
His counterpart was good too. Number 10 was stroking.
Hauk.
Yes, yeah. He was hitting. I mean, he hit four. He went 4 for 6 from three, and I thought he got him rolling. And then Clayton. I mean, that dude's just quick. He knows how to get where he wants to get, and he is not willing. He's not scared to shoot. I mean, he is. More than, and they got plenty of size on Florida, but no, that's a pretty good squad too with some size. It's going to be interesting, but you got the SEC on one side versus each other, and so one team, Florida, Auburn's going to get in, and then Houston, the best out of bounds play in the world, last second I've ever seen in my life with Sampson, knowing that Purdue doesn't cover the inbounder, like that was so incredible, and that team competes and fights, and we should have two really good games like that. They should be competitive wars that. Both sides scrap and fight, and who just makes the most shots?
Well, on the bright side, we get to talk college football because it's not a great day to talk baseball, but we'll leave that for another, especially if you're in the Southeast and Braves country. But anyway, never mind.
No, I'm never going to talk baseball ever. We're not doing bad that day. Ever.
Colorado and Syracuse. We had talked last week about the possibility of them doing some sort of joint practice, spring game together type thing. And the NCAA said sort of, no bueno.
I told you this was going to happen, Brent.
But the interesting part was how they said no. Timing, recruiting advantage versus other teams, and academics. And, the academic sort of mess part of that, Yes, I for those who are just listening, your facial expression says everything.
But stupid athletes, my butt.
So to me, though, this means that all bets are off for next year. I think this is a thing next year. They get people get it scheduled in advance. I think I've even read or saw where Coach Gundy was talking about maybe doing that with Oklahoma, because they obviously don't play each other, and you know, they're not, it's not a conference game for them anymore. So I think based upon how that wording is, it's almost like this is going to be something that is just becomes a thing if people are amenable to it.
What you just said, man, how about that? Like renew some rivalries in practice, you know, like that's kind of cool, because we've lost so many natural rivalries because of, you know, conference. Obviously, the conference is changing and realigning and everybody, you know, getting paychecks and stuff. That's interesting. You could still see, you know, some of those old hated rivalries, but this would be good for the sport. I hope they televise it. I hope it becomes like the spring games in the future. But again, the NCAA is like, wait a minute. No. I have to make money off of this, not just y'all. So they got to figure that out. Like that's priority number one is, wait a minute. Okay, before we Katie bar the door, how are we going to get ours? Because that's who they are. That's what they are. Yeah. You smile, bro. That's exactly what they do. Like they got to get their cut. Okay. Like they got to make sure they do. So I hope this happens, man. It's good for the athletes. It's good for the schools. It makes you better. It makes it more fun. So hopefully this was the year that gets it going. But the student athlete thing, kick rocks, NCAA. Shut up, man. Like, don't give me the student athlete thing. We're done using that as an excuse. We use that for a long time. So don't get me ticked off with that stupid excuse, because they're minor league players. Okay, let's treat them. That's how we're treating them. That's how we're paying them. That's how these things are working. Get out of here with the academics crap, bro.
Very true. By the way, also, since we last talked, Dion got himself a nice extension and
is
raise.
Is that warranted?
$10 million club.
Is that?
I think so.
Okay. Because that's an interesting one to me. Like, because here's the thing. I can look at it and say it absolutely makes total sense. I just wonder if people look at his record and go, why would I give him $10 million plus a year to a guy that hasn't won that much? Look at what Colorado was and look at what they are now. And look at the star power and look at the eyeballs and the attention and the recruiting. Everything about that program is doing this. So paying him accordingly is a smart move by Colorado. Like, that's a great move. You should have done that. So I wonder. I think some people sometimes go, well, they're not winning that much. Colorado fans are jacked about how much they won this year. They are stoked because they've seen way worse. Like, before he got there, they went a season, I think, without winning, like, or one win. Like, that, they're used to really, really bad. So while Prime hasn't delivered, like, a Big 12 appearance or anything like that, they're relevant. They're talked about. They're on television. There's a reason, and it's because of him.
Yep. Stanford now has an interim coach. So they obviously fired Troy Taylor amid some allegations and issues there, and they now have Frank Reich, former coach of their general manager, Andrew Luck. As their interim coach. And they've had some guys hit the portal, like David Bailey, the edge guy.
Yeah.
One of the most productive pass rushers a year ago. So different, like, and what's interesting about it is that they announced it as a one-year deal. They said this is a one-year interim thing. We're going to look and do a national search to find the coach of the future. So that was, I thought that was interesting how he did that and how he went to an old relationship to do that.
Smart, super smart. I mean, you're getting a great coach. I mean, that's a great coach. That's a guy that's been very, very successful. You know, obviously a lot to learn going from pro to college, but just like Belichick, college football is more pro like every year, you know, like we're talking about salary caps and having GMs and all that different stuff. So I think it's a pretty good hire for the short term. They had to do something right to make this situation better. You get a coach that's a proven winner, that's been around ball his whole life. Like I don't see the downside of this. I don't know how you can be negative about it, because I think Stanford got a really, really good coach, and it was obviously a tough situation.
As a stabilizer. Yes, very much there. And someone that, hey, all right, we can. And this is something that's actually been talked about, where guys who were either average or, you know, kind of just okay in the NFL still having very much a coaching advantage at the college level and doing well and having success at the college level kind of thing. So Yep. That goes with that. So that's there. Next up, some engagement and fun engagement. We've been doing this over the past few weeks. Logo association. So the logo association of the day today is the LSU Tiger. And I was curious what you first thought of when you see the LSU Tiger logo. And I think the one we put out was the, you know, the purple and yellow sort of true tiger face there. What is that that you associate with that when you see this moment, by the way, college football moment that comes to your mind?
Unfortunately, it's a bad one for me. It's a personal one. It's going to Death Valley as a sophomore and them winning. It's Justin Vincent beating us in the championship game where he rushed for over 200 yards in the SEC championship game. So like it's not a good thing. It's not a positive outcome. It's Nick Saban. Like he was there when I was there with, you know, Marcus Spears and Chad Lavallee, and like, I mean, just the list of guys go on and on. It's definitely the Saban era. It's them, you know, beating Georgia. It's them, you know, kind of making their national championship run with him and kind of bringing that pride back to Baton Rouge.
Give you some of those, since you kind of are the enemy in that, you're the other side of that coin.
I was Kentucky beating again. Yes.
Yeah. Kentucky beating them in 07. That was one that was mentioned. A lot of Georgia fans were very quick to post the picture of Jalen Carter holding up the one and holding Jaden Daniels.
Daniels in his arm.
Yep. A lot of people think that's
a pretty good one, by the way.
Yes, that is a pretty good one. A lot of we're trolling with the Brian Kelly, like the recruiting little meme thing, you know, video that he had where he's fingers over his eyes. McFadden, we talked about Arkansas a couple weeks ago.
Yep.
McFadden against them.
Wasn't that seven overtimes?
No. Well, they had the seven overtime game against A&M.
That's right. Okay.
I think it was like maybe two or three with Arkansas. And then a lot of people brought up the, in a sort of, I guess, comedic way, the Florida shoe game.
Oh, yeah. That was a good one.
from a few years back.
Did anybody mention the earthquake?
I don't know. I went through a lot of responses. I don't know that I saw that one.
I remember they scored one time and they literally got so loud and crazy that they caused an earthquake. That crowd, man. I've been to every major stadium in America, and that crowd at night hits different. It is a different animal, a different beast, a different clientele. Like, it's fan freaking tastic. Like, it is a bucket list for every fan. If you are a fan that wants to see elite atmospheres that are second to none, I mean, it is incredible. Put it on your list to go to.
Some other ones that for the home squad, for those that were LSU fans that were mentioned, obviously just a lot of Joe Burrow. And the, like, for me personally, that season when he came out for senior day and that with the Burrow and the EAUX on his back of his jersey, and they followed him from right behind as he walked out onto the field. That was one that I very much remember. The Mason Taylor walk off, the victory against Bama from a couple years ago. Anything related to the Honey Badger and all the plays that he made. Marcus Spears pick six in the national championship game. Jacob Hester against Florida, fourth down conversion against Florida. And one other one, like anything for me with Les Miles was something that I remember. But another one for me is one that our guest that is going to come on here in a few minutes might remember. But it's the game against Georgia in 2013 when it was Mettenberger versus Murray. And it was 44-41. And it's something that you maybe don't remember about that game, but Odell Beckham Jr. was the kick returner. And I vividly remember watching the game and him one handing a kick return that he just kneeled down on, but it was a, you know, kick return that he just one handed with ease and then took his knee. And that's one that I very much remember when it comes to LSU football, because that was
he made another kind of big one handed catch too.
Yes.
That was kind of LSU,
one more so that I remember. But a lot of And I know when we were looking at it to preview the LSU-Bama game this season, there were so many of those years where that was a top 10, top 15 matchup. The 2019 game, back and forth with Tua and Burrow in that game. Like, all about anything about the 2019 season to me is, it's just very much memorable. And it's also recent. There's a little more recency bias to some of that.
And that's the beautiful thing about the logo too. Like, it's when you grew up, your era, your first impressions, your first like encounters with that school and that university, which is different for everybody. You know, some people are ingrained in it at a young age, so they hit it at a young age. Some people not till they get older. And you know, for me, I was born in New Brunswick, New Jersey. Like, my dad was not a college football fan, so he did not talk to me about college football. So I experienced all this stuff as a player firsthand, and I was like, this is freaking unreal. Like, this is awesome. So I think everybody's are different.
One other thing that actually wanted to talk about before we bring Mr. Danielson on. Did you see Coastal Carolina's – so this is a stat, by the way, from one of two things. So LSU has lost every season opener since Tyler O'Neill started opening day home run streak, and he just made it 6 in a row this past weekend. So doesn't bode well for LSU this year in the home opener with this guy hitting a home run. Jeez. So that's not good.
Why we got to go to negative town right away? We just started the year, for goodness sakes.
Well, I mean, that's college football Reddit for you. But Coastal Carolina, by the way, free concessions at their home games this year.
What does that mean? Three concessions.
Free, not three. Free, like no charge.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Okay, I gotta know what kind of food they're serving. Like, a great idea to get people to come.
You will be able to get 4 items per concession stand visit from a selection of hot dogs, nachos, popcorn, and drinks. And there is no limit to the number of in-game visits. But you got to scan each trip so through their app that they're about ready to create.
Oh, my gosh.
But yes.
This is genius. Like, this is gorgeous. How great is this? Coastal Carolina on the forefront of just groundbreak. Sign me up. You know how fat I'd have been in college if I had this? Good Lord. I might have actually turned into a baseball fan. Like, if you're going to feed me, I'm in, because baseball's hard to watch. I'm not a huge baseball guy. We've established that, but I get a little bit bored. I wonder what Gary Danielson thinks of that. Like, Gary Danielson, would you be going to baseball games if they were giving you free football concessions?
Games. This is football games, Dave.
Oh, this not is baseball, football.
Though. Yes,
football games. It's even better. Gary, what are you getting from the concession stand if it's free all the time at a football game?
Man, come on. I'm really, really simple. You guys should know that. I'm still AOL, you know, is my email address. You know, I grew up in the 60s. I'm like, for sure, well, I really don't drink. I don't like beer. You know, I'll have a margarita, but that's really not drinking, you know, like that. But I'll go hot dogs. I'll get hot dogs for the whole family, because usually when I go, I take the whole family. And, I'll just enjoy the game, you know, whatever I'm watching. Minor league game, football, high school, I just enjoy the ball.
That's fantastic. Well, Gary, you did this for so long. And when people think in the South, especially where we're from, they think about you and they think about Vern and they think about, obviously, Ness. I mean, dude, all of those years, all of those calls, man, what's going to stick out to you the most about those years?
I think number one, David, would be like twofold, I think. You know, I did 2 national championships before I came to the SEC. I did the Michael Vick Virginia Tech against Florida State. Brent Musburger and I did that game. And then we did LSU Oklahoma when Nick took his team there. And then I came to the league in 2006. So I had done a bunch of big games, you know, UCLA, USC, Michigan, Ohio State 2 or 3 times. Texas, Oklahoma, Notre Dame games. I had done just about every big game. Coming to the league, if you can remember in 04 and 05, there was a huge chip on the shoulder of the SEC because an undefeated Auburn team didn't make it. So I knew what I was coming to, that the league was primed and ready to win. And I anticipated it. I mean, when I left, people go, "You're crazy. You're leaving doing national championship games?" Because I was in the rotation to do it. And I go, "Listen, the SEC is going to explode. I'm just telling you, it's going to explode." So I thought I was ready for big games. And the, you know, CBS had the big game every week. But man, the big games in the SEC are something else. You know, it's like doing an Ohio State game, a Penn State game, a Michigan game. But there's seven of those teams in the SEC yep. every week. You know, it's there's equality at the top. But when I came in, the depth. So number one was just every week. Vern and I had the number one game in the country every week, you know, and a game of consequence and a game that had national title consequences. And then the next half of it was just the level of the athletes. I mean, you know, I played in the NFL. I know what an NFL athlete looks like. And they were just all over these rosters that I was doing. And I was just blown away at the level of the athletes that I was covering, the intensities of the football game. You know, that was the year that Urban Meyer, 2006, yep. turned the corner. You know, that was some special football games. And so I dove right into the middle of that. So those two things stood out to me the most. You know, the consequences of the games, the importance of the games to the SEC fan base, and then the level of athletes.
So is there one atmosphere more so than any other that you just, and maybe kind of coincides with the game?
Are you guys playing with me here? Did you not understand what happened to me 2 years ago when I was doing an interview about a football game, about Georgia playing at Tennessee? Breakdown of the whole game. And the last thing was, you know, what about the Tennessee stadium? What about the fans? What's that going to mean? And I just said, every stadium in the SEC is like that. I mean, Tennessee's fantastic.
Unbelievable.
But so is Georgia. So is LSU. So is Florida. I mean, I said, even, you know, in my day when I came in the league, Arkansas, that small, loud stadium, I mean,
yep.
A&M. I mean, I thought that's what was different, that the SEC had one of those things you had to go through every week, you know, and I just got crushed. So there's no, I understand that it got hyped, but to me, I didn't see the difference. I mean, I don't know, David, if you were there, I did the Notre Dame game at Georgia.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I have never seen anything like that atmosphere that night.
That's when they fixed the lights. They had the light show. It was crazy.
Right. Yep. That's right. That was as loud as I've ever heard anything for, you know, an hour and a half, three hours, you know. I mean, it was
seven false starts.
Exactly. Yep. So, you know, one of the things that I tried to do is not to pretend to be an SEC guy. I thought that was an insult to the SEC fans, that if I just joined in and go, I'm one of you guys, I didn't earn that. You know, you earned that by playing in this league. You grew up. So, you know, I tried to call balls and strikes and stay in the middle. Did it work perfect? Maybe not. You know, the social media kind of ran with it, but it worked good for me. So, you know, that was what I liked doing. But I damn respected everything about the whole league and what I was doing every week. I'll tell you that.
Yeah. I think that's the part that people don't understand unless you go to the South, is how crazy and psychotic all the atmospheres are. So they just, you just, that's why you got to bring it. And then you got these kids that think differently. But when you talked about Urban came in the league. So what about Urban or Tebow? Like that time, what sticks out? What memory do you have that you can share with us that might be something that people don't really know about or haven't heard about in a while?
So, you know, I don't know if there's any three more intense people I've ever met than Urban, Nick Saban, and Kirby Smart. I mean, these guys are at a level, you know, when I was doing those SEC games through those years, you know, I knew Nick because I covered him at Michigan State. I even knew him, you know, when he was at Toledo, and I've known him a really long time. So he was different. He's my age. So I never really felt that intensity that everybody else did. But when I got around Urban and the way he ran that program at Florida, it was like, damn, this is survival of the fittest, man. And I was just like, you know, Tebow walking into that and challenging those guys on that team to be tough was a sight to be seen. And he was the perfect guy for Urban to build that program around. Urban thought, I am getting older. Their quarterback that year that took him to the national championship, Chris Leak,
yeah.
He thought Chris was a little soft. He thought he was good, but he thought he was, and that used to just piss Chris Leak off because he kept bringing Tebow up to him all the time, you know, and but that team, that was, practice was survival of the fittest. Sprints were that way. Urban was that way. Urban was that way with the media, to us, to me, to everybody. I mean, there was no way you could be soft and play for that team, you know? So, and then, you know, I kind of grew up with Kirby. I knew him at LSU when he worked for Nick. And then, you know, all those years at Alabama, and now we know what Kirby is now. You know, Kirby has a chip on his shoulder, man. If you don't ask him the right question the right way, you're getting it right in the chin when, you know, and I liked it, you know, I mean, I did. He and I were not buddies. I'm not buddies with any of them, but which kind of leads me to my, I thought, first really, really big game. I heard you guys talking about it earlier. It was the LSU Florida game in 2007. And that's when Jacob Hester did all those fourth down runs. That was, David, you would want to play in that game. Yep. That was a war. That was guys on the field. And afterwards, guys in the locker room saying, and I heard it, I listened to it, saying, after a while, I didn't care about the score. I just wasn't going to let my guy beat me. That's all I cared about. And that's how that game was. And I was mesmerized by that football game. That was one of the best competitive games I had ever seen.
So now looking at what you've transitioned to as CBS left the SEC and into the Big Ten, how was that change for you? How did that change for you with your weekly routine, all that? Because obviously you'd been in that league for so long and known it. And then you go to this whole new world that is the Big Ten, a whole new world, at least for you on a weekly basis.
It's not that much different. You know, I mean, a Wisconsin game, an Iowa game didn't have it did have some big implications back then. They were playing for 1-2 back in those days. You know, the Big Ten was the king. That was what pissed off the SEC so much is, you know, every Saturday it was Michigan, Ohio State, Penn State was the national game, and that's where everything was drawn to. Remember that 2006 year? So I was used to doing big games. I mean, doing a game in Columbus. I mean, there's no more rabid fan base than Ohio State fans. Michigan fans hold you to a high standard, but they're a little more sophisticated, and I'm not saying anything against the Buckeye fans because, you know, I played for the Browns, and they loved their Browns, and I loved, you know, that area and playing for there. So in that area, but I just felt that the SEC was coming on, and for a while the Big Ten just wasn't keeping up. But I think the bar has been raised now, and when I started doing the games in the Big Ten, kind of got in a little, made a little bit of news by saying, listen, guys, yeah, you got a lot of money and you've got three networks and you're going to get a lot of exposure. But I'm telling you right now, the SEC is not coming down to your level. You have to go up and beat them. That's, if you want the respect, if you want everybody talking about Big Ten, you got to go up and beat them. And I think it kind of turned in that win by Georgia over Ohio State when they, you know, Ohio State missed the last field goal and, you know, they win that game and win the national, that was the de facto championship. They're going to play TCU. That was the championship in that game. Those were the two best teams. And then from then on, I think the Big Ten felt like, you know, we've kind of arrived. We can play with these guys. And now because of the NIL and the way things are changing, the talent is being spread out a little bit more than it was before. And, you know, with the addition of Oregon and USC, it's starting to inch up. And I can see a level of equal talent now at the Penn States, the Ohio States, the Michigans, the Oregons, the USC's close. They drop off a little bit this year that the league needed to stand up and say we're as good as the SEC.
Yeah, and obviously Ohio State winning the Natty, proving they were the best team this year.
Right.
I can't not go back because even just the names I think about, like you working not only being a legend, but working with Vern, working right. with Ness, like Spurrier, Bowden, Johnny right. Football, Cam Newton. Like I can't, like Brent, you can ask those questions about those new stuff. I can't but ask. I have to ask, like just going through those guys, just – like those eras, like what Spurrier, like you got a good, sport, yeah. a good Spurrier story because he was a gem. I mean, he good was. Lord.
He was. I loved doing Steve's games. I did the Florida State games at their peak. You know, I did the national championship when Bobby was at doing that. I did his last game in the Gator Bowl, Bobby Bowden, when he retired and Jimbo took over. But those guys were unique guys. And Steve, as open as people think he is, he was very clever with his answers. He was friendly. He would come over and talk to you. He would kid about it. He would talk NFL. But boy, trying to get a nugget out of him about his game plan, I'd rather talk to Saban. You know, I mean, you know, Nick had a way of wanting to kind of let you know what he was going to do to win the game, you know, and not outwardly, a little more X and O-y. You know, I would catch it. You know, I'm not talking down about anybody, but a Nick kind of wanted to wink at you. And like I had a way, boy, you could never get that out of Steve. And then back in those days when I was doing it at first, you know, my first game was Nebraska, Tom Osborne. He was really tough. And then Bobby Bowden, he invited me right up, you know, up into his coach's booth. Up
Come on in, up buddy.
There. Stood up there and watched practice. Steve stood there the whole practice, and we talked NFL ball the whole time. You know, it was different, but you're right. The names, you know, the emergence of Cam. I've got a game tape that I keep of Cam playing late in the Florida game where you can see that he's going to be Tebow. You know, I mean, he's going to do the same thing. And then he has to leave for a while and resurfaces at Auburn. But, you know, the Georgia games with, you know, Stafford and, you know, I mean, Nick Chubb, that, you know, two of the biggest injuries in the SEC, I did both games. Marcus Lattimore at South Carolina and then Nick Chubb against Tennessee. We did both those games. And, you know, I mean, I loved those two guys, you know, had so much respect for both of them and to see those injuries. But yeah, the characters that Vern and I dealt with, you know, Les Miles, you know, you guys were mentioning games, you know, the game of the century. I mean,
oh yeah.
When I thought Les maybe made his biggest mistake ever, he fights out that game at Alabama with maybe on that team, both teams, maybe 50 future NFL players on the field.
Yep.
Okay. And afterwards they win and Tracy Wolfson asks them, you know, what coach would you be willing to play Alabama again? And Les should have said, hell no, we beat him fair and square. And he said, I'd be proud to play him again. And for all of us that have played sports, you knew Alabama was going to be ready for that game. And that might have cost LSU a national championship.
Davey mentioned Brad Nessler and Vernon Lundquist. Right. What is it about those two that obviously, you know, the play-by-play element and then you as the analyst that but more the relationship. It's always seemed like the two of you and Vern and then you and Brad have just been buddies who are hanging out and talking about the game. What is it about those guys that made them so special, made that relationship with each of you guys so great?
So this is a little bit hard to put into words because I think so much about both of them. You know, Brad and I came into this booth in 1990, and worked a couple years, and then they put Brad and I together to start out the noon game of the Big Ten. When ESPN got the package to do noon Big Ten games, they put Brad and I together. And we did 7.5 years. And in our six and a half years. So we're going to finish our seventh year. They kind of mixed everybody up. They took Greasy away from Keith Jackson and put him with Brad. They put Fouts with Keith Jackson. So, you know, two Hall of Famers. And then me with Brent, you know, a walk-on NFL quarterback with Musburger. And they gave us the national championship game. And, you know, I did 7 years with Brent. And Brent, when he, you know, Hall of Famer, when he walks into any room, he owns the room. He's as close to Dick Vitale as you can get walking into any place. And we were good together. But I needed a little something different. I had an opportunity to go to CBS, and I knew that I would fit with Vern. And I felt that I would be a good fit. You know, Todd had decided to leave and make a move. I thought the noon CBS game could be the best game in the country. I thought Vern and I could build it. I thought our personalities were enough unlike. We weren't the same person, you know. And I thought it would work really good, and it did, because he's a storyteller. He loves all the atmosphere of the game. He loves the bands. He loves the history. He knows all of the alumni. And here was me and David, you know, us stupid quarterbacks. I was in my game plan. You know, I was between the white lines. I don't give a shit about where the bands are, you know, it was X's and O's. I didn't mind myself, you know, how loud it is. I don't care how loud it is. All I need to do as a quarterback is make sure I can snap the ball and get my play started. That was my mindset. And I think it worked, you know. And then, you know, I had then the opportunity when Vern was leaving, I was hoping Brad would get the job because he's from Atlanta. He loves the Dogs. He loves SEC football. I really wanted him to come bad. And when he called me and told me he wanted to do it, because, you know, Brad was doing, you know, big games at ESPN, working with Todd. We loved working with Todd. And when he came, I knew that would work, and I knew the SEC would at least love him, you know. So that might have been the toughest seat that anybody ever had to take, was Brad taking over for Vern. But Brad, and David, I don't know how well you know him, Brad is a great X and O guy. He understands football. There is no bullying him. When I'm doing a game, you know, I can tell when I say something that he's impressed with, because he's heard it a lot. I mean, he's worked with the who's who of people. And I have great, I think he's like Pat Summerall doing the games. He's like an ex-player up there. And you're right, we're talking ball. And I tell you, I'll bet you if you really listened, he will finish my sentences 10, 12 times a game. That's how in tune we are. So, you know, it's been a great run. We've had some great, great football games together. And three of the greatest calls of all time I was a part of. You know, Brent, when Ohio State, the Holy Buckeye or Holy Toledo, whatever the heck he said, fourth down play that put him in the national championship against Purdue. I was doing that game with Brent. Vern's great call on the kick six. What, oh, yeah. two weeks after the Hail Mary that beat Georgia? I think you guys remember that.
Yeah.
Okay. And then Ness's great call when Milroe throws fourth and 31 to win the Iron Bowl, where he goes Bond, Isaiah Bond. And David, you should appreciate this. Somebody asked me, what do you remember as your great calls? You've been a part of some great, great calls. And there were others I can name too. But here's what I remember. I didn't say a damn word. That's what you're supposed to do. And that
supposed to lay out.
Get your instinct. I mean, I played quarterback. I was leading 10 men that were all drafted and all number one draft picks. And I had to be the leader and I had to be talking. I had to be saying stuff and I had to have them believe me. And then in the key parts of these games, I got to shut up. That's hard, you know? So I was, that's how I remember those calls.
They tell you to let it breathe and you'll hear some. And when good ones like you guys can do it, the atmosphere takes over and becomes the star. And it's really, it's really fun to see. So you talk about Gary. I'll never forget sitting down with Gary so many times, Vern. Just so many times. Such an unbelievable personality. But like those meetings with you guys every week, I used to sit down with him in Blackledge. You came in the year after I left.
Yep.
But like, who are those guys, man? Like the Johnny Footballs or those guys over the 20 years that you did it, that sat down with you, remember?
You're right, Dave. That is so much fun. I'm meeting those guys. Well, Tebow was great. You know, I'll give you a small Tebow one. It was, we kind of treated him with a lot of respect because he was pretty young and he was so big. He was huge, you know, personality. In fact, you can remember those years when CBS was getting criticized then, not for being the home of Alabama. We were the home of Tebow back in those days. Like, we're sick. We're tired of you talking about Tebow, but he was the star. And I laid low. There were a lot of things I wanted to ask him, but I kind of was deferential to him, you know, until his senior year, he decided to come back. And I said, Tim, why are you coming back? I mean, what do you want to be when you grow up? And he said, a pro quarterback. And I said, well, tell me how this is helping you become run off tackle power plays to become a pro quarterback. I mean, it was a loaded question, you know, and I knew it. And he goes, I love being a Gator. I want to win. And whatever the coach tells me, that's what I'm going to want to do. They're training to be an NFL quarterback. And I go, well, why don't you just demand it? Like, I want to throw 30 times a game. They'll let you do it. And he goes, that's not how I roll. And I respected that, you know, but you're right. Guy after guy, we were there in Auburn when Cam held out over the money issue, when he didn't practice all week. Nobody knew if he was going to play. We interviewed him Friday before the game. He didn't have much to say, but he showed up. He's very engaging, very, very smart. He knew how to answer the questions without answering them. Let's see, Joe Burrow. He judges everything you say. He dissected everything you said, you know, every question he kind of dissected and had a very, very answer that
thoughts.
Thoughtful and somewhat, you know, critique-y, you know.
Snarky.
His answer was almost critique-ish of your question, you know. And you know, you could just see he was an NFL quarterback. But you know, going back, I mean, I interviewed Tom Brady, you know, Drew Brees, Eddie George, you know, I mean, there were tons of players in the Big Ten that have that stature. You know, Brady in those days, I never met a more intense person in my life than Tom Brady. He was battling. He was mad. He probably would have transferred in modern football. Yep. Remember the name Drew Henson, the quarterback that came out with the big, he went to baseball and went to the Yankees. Well, those two were battling and Brady was just ticked off that he had to share the time. And it was an interesting time back. You know, I covered Kirk, interviewed Kirk when he was a quarterback at Ohio State, Kirk Herbstreit. So
I really wish you could throw some big names in there. You can't think of any bigger names. Jeez.
You know, Johnny Manziel was a kind of a know-it-all. I didn't connect very well with him. I would not call him Johnny Football. And I don't think he appreciated that, you know.
And why wouldn't you?
I don't know. I just thought, I mean, I did after he beat Alabama. I would not do it before he beat Alabama. I said on the air, I said, all right, I'll do it, Johnny Football. I mean, that was one of the most magical games, you know, when he beat him in Tuscaloosa. That was something. So, listen, I've had a great ride. Those are great names. And, you know, the coaches were, you know, I'm just thinking out loud, doing those Alabama games in their prime, you know, when they were running off those championships. Nick's the head coach and Lane Kiffin and Kirby are the two coordinators you interview. You know, I mean, those are three tough personalities coming in one after another, and then you'd get McElroy or whatever on top of it. So those were some fun days.
You mentioned how being silent in the calls and sort of letting the moment breathe and all those things, but there's actually one recently that I remember where the quarterback in you had a comment in the Florida Georgia game, the Georgia Florida game, however you want to say it, but when N'Kobe Dean intercepted, I think it was Richardson right before the half, and the quarterback in you saw it before it happened,
sure,
and there
did.
Was oh no, oh no, he right. saw that pick six coming.
Yeah, I thought Dan Mullen had his worst 5 minutes of coaching right there, maybe in his career. He had a young quarterback that hadn't played. They were down on their old goal. I remember they ran a quarterback sneak. They would have gotten out of the half, and they were giving Georgia, with that defense, a good football game. You know, it was turning out to be a defensive game where the pressure was going to move towards Georgia. And he got too cute. He tried to throw the ball over the middle. First they get a fumble. Then they try to throw the ball over the middle. That gets picked off. I think N'Kobe Dean tipped it on that play. And then they try an out to the outside with a young quarterback who's barely played. And that's where the coach needed to help the quarterback. And that turned into a rout after that. That's why you're right. And then what's funny about that is the fan bases think you're actually rooting for Florida when you're actually just reacting as a quarterback in that situation. So that was very perceptive of you.
Well, and I think you learn quickly, Gary, in this business, like you can't please the fans. Good Lord. I mean, there's nothing like if you pick someone, then apparently you hate the other one. If you say something positive about one, you hate the other one. And I think learning how to ignore that is part of the craft that you definitely learn. Because I think I love that about your personality probably the most. You don't give a crap. And that's how it should be.
It's you're close, David. I do give a crap in that, but I didn't want to. I mean, we all want to be liked. Okay, so let's talk about this a little bit because it is the elephant in the room with me and the SEC, okay? You know, Twitter was rough. And I didn't love it for me, you know, but I had chose not early with Twitter, not to fight back, not to show, you know, a clip when somebody was saying I was for one team, show a clip where I had said the opposite before and kind of try to tamp it down. I said, you know, the fans of the SEC deserve to criticize me. I'm criticizing their coaches and their players and the game and the officials, and I deserve it too. Maybe that was a mistake in retrospect. The reason I didn't want to dive in too much is I didn't want to it affect me. I didn't want to try to play to the fan base and try to please. I wanted to call it the way I saw it. I mean, I was being paid to call it as I saw it. And I said, no, I'm going to do it this way. What the thing I didn't like about it the most, and the reason I am just picking apart what you said, I put up with it and I wouldn't let them change me. I will agree with that. But I hated that it took away from our team. You know, I hated that on Saturday night and Sunday on Twitter and on, you know, the websites and everything, it was all about me, everybody talking about that, because we have, you know this from doing games, you know, we have 70 highly skilled veteran people that are working their ass off to put the SEC in, or the Big Ten now, in the best possible light. And here it was, and I swear to you guys, if all of that Twitter had been 100% positive, I still would have hated it, because the only way I survived in the NFL is I made my other 10 teammates better. That's because I was not good enough to do it myself. So I just kind of lived that way. And that's what hurt the most about it, that it took away from CBS, and that bothered me the most. I do have two funny stories that I want to squeeze in that were really, really, the year that Vern announced he was leaving was the year after, or maybe the 2 years after, Allie LaForce left. Remember our silent reporter? Yes, and everybody loved Allie, and obviously everybody loved Vern. And we were going to the SEC Media Days, and there was this tweet out there, and the commissioner had seen it. And so I thought it was funny as hell. And it was, it's a cruel world in the SEC when we lose Allie and Vern and we keep Gary. And I thought that was pretty damn funny. So I went with that one for about 7 more years. But my best story, and here's what I want to talk about the SEC fans. I understand the fine palm aspect, the call-in radio, the tweeting, that's all fun. That's fine, okay? But the SEC fans never, ever, 99.9% ever mistreated me anywhere. And when I go through Atlanta Airport, I'm recognized by SEC fans. No one ever, everybody would say, you know, Garrett, give us a little love, and they would kid me. That was all fine. But they all said, hey, you know, love you doing the games, 100%. But there was this time I was flying from Atlanta to Tuscaloosa for an Auburn game. And I'm in that connecting flight and I'm sitting there and I can feel everybody in our gate is looking at me. They all know who I am, you know, and they're all got either Auburn, but most of them have Bama, you know, they got the crimson hats on and the jersey, and they're all staring at me. And all of a sudden, about 10 minutes later, this young lady walks up, maybe 23, 24, and she whispers, she kind of looks around and she goes, Mr. Danielson. And I go, yeah. She goes, could I get an autograph? My dad really loves your commentary. Could I get an autograph from my dad? And I said, sure, but you got to do something for me first. She goes, what? I go, turn around and yell out that Gary Danielson is the best announcer in college football right now. And she goes, what? And I go, yeah, turn around, face all these Alabama fans and go, Gary Danielson is the greatest announcer in football. And she goes, do I have to? And I said, no, but she just was too afraid to do it. So it was fun times. It was fun.
Well, that, I think again, man, when I think about your time, I appreciate the fact, especially once I started to get into the business, that I see so many guys that they do. They listen to the outside noise, Gary, and they want to please everybody.
Right.
When that's not our job. Our job is to tell you our thoughts and our feelings, and right, sometimes that's going to rub people the wrong way. And I appreciate that you did that. And what does retirement look like? What are you doing next? To honey to-do lists or do-it-yourself stuff? What we got going on?
Yeah. I'm not great around the house, you know. I played 13 years NFL football, and my wife handled the household, you know, for all those years, you know, being a quarterback. I mean, it was 80 hours a week getting ready for football, you know. And so, you know, she's a daughter of a, you know, coach, a college coach, so she knew what it was like. I don't know. You know, I got grandkids ready to enter high school football, probably out in the bleachers watching football. Got a lot of good friends. I live down here in Florida. It's a lot of Midwest people down here. I got a lot of great friends. This week has been great. You know, I announced my retirement. I heard from teammates on every team I was on, TV teammates. You know, it was a nice deal. So I'm gonna. I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to do what I j have done for 36 years. I'm going to bust my butt for the 17 weeks every week. I'm going to try to figure out the puzzle before the game. I'm going to do my job. I enjoy doing that. I really do. And it really, even as much as I enjoy a big game, I get just as excited doing a game that maybe we only get 1% of the people following it because I know those teams are all in on that game. And if the players are all in, I'm all in, you know? And if I wanted to tell you this story because you just guys deserve to hear it. I've been able to do the Army Navy game, you know, 16 years. And I was a little nervous about doing that game when I first got it because even though I ran the Wishbone in college my senior year, I just like, God, am I'm so used to doing these games with a lot of NFL players. You know, how am I going to do justice? And you don't know anybody. I mean, you go into that game, they play a lot of players. You don't really know. You know, it's a lot of work. My first year, we traveled to West Point, Indianapolis, and we met the cadets. And the first guy we met was he was going to be a Marine at Annapolis. And he was a linebacker. And I go, you know, you're playing football and you want to be a Marine. I mean, you're going to go into combat. You're going to risk your life. You know, why? You know, and he goes, Mr. Danielson, I'll tell you why. Someone has to do it. And I know I can do it. And I don't hold it against anybody else who can't, but I know I can do it. And I'm willing to do it and sacrifice for my country. And I'm fine with however this, he said, I don't plan on dying. I plan on killing, but I know I can, and I know some people can't. And now I'm all in, okay, after that. So then I go to West Point, and we interview the first player, and I go, you know, we're here to do the game. Tell us a little bit. And he goes, Mr. Danielson, before we start, we all watch SEC football. That was back in the day, or the Big Ten football. I watched you guys do Big Ten football. And they said, do us a favor. And I said, what can I do? I'll do whatever you want. And they said, do not grade us on a curve. Critique us just like we're SEC or Big Ten football players. And I was like, I'm all in for this game.
Wow, that's incredible. Well, incredible career. Happy retirement. Hopefully, you get to play some golf. Maybe we'll have to hit you up back in the season. If you're going to study and you're going to do all that work, we might have to get you back on during college football because that would be a tremendous use of your time. That's for dang sure. But we
Yeah.
appreciate you, my man.
David, you're the best. I wish I could have covered you. I wish you could have stayed healthy. You were a tremendous player. Watched you on tape, obviously. I have so much respect for anybody that does this. Especially the way you played ball, and it's a pleasure. Anytime. Now that we figured out how to do this damn thing, we should do it again.
Take two was
Thanks
much
again.
better. We apologize for the technical difficulty, but we got it done. And you're the
All right,
best, Gary.
guys.
Thanks, dude.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.